This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Yeah, 1974 was, I think, a very good year for at least in paleoanthropology for three different reasons. One, Lucy was discovered. Two, we had Tracy Kibo was born in 1974. And three, I was born in 1974. And it seems all of us are aging quite gracefully. So yeah, it was a very good year. And if anyone is looking at what Paleodomes is on Google, you won't find it, because it's something I coined. And that's what I'll mostly concentrate about. It's now accepted that all of humanity shares a common heritage with the roots deeply embedded in Africa. The quest for researchers have thus been to find where these roots are and how deep they extend. The discovery of Lucy provided us with one of the major and no doubt most significant roots that extends to 3.2 million years. This discovery provided a springboard from which other researchers have been able to build their case on theories of human origins, seek new lines of research, compare their finds, and draw up conclusions regarding our human journey. Lucy's discovery ignited humankind's imagination and led to deeper focus in explorations into remote areas, leading to discoveries of new sites in Africa. And indeed, currently, we have over 200 paleontological and archaeological sites spread throughout Africa. In fact, we can say the entire of Africa is one big World Heritage Site. Not only did the discovery of Lucy lead to intensified research into human origins, but also inspired research into origins of evolution of other animals. This has resulted in other significant discoveries, such as the 200 million year old Kenyansaurus americanensis, the 18 million year old mega carnivores, Simba Kumbwa kutoka Africa, the 13 million year old chameleon, that's Kaluma benvisti, and many other important finds which extend to millions of years that encompass the entire duration of our Earth's history. These focused explorations have motivated registration of African regions and sites into the UNESCO World Heritage Sites, owing to their outstanding universal value. Among the African sites and regions listed and UNESCO World Heritage Sites, for example, the lower valley of the Awash, located in the West Afar region depression, and from which Lucy and Dikika Child were discovered. Also, the hominid fossil sites from South Africa, which include the Cradle of Humankind, Makapan Valley, and Taung, and from which the likes of Taung Child, Littlefoot, Mrs. Prez, Australopithecus, Sidiba have been found. Also, another region is the lower valley of the Omo in southwestern Ethiopia, where Paranthropus boisei have been discovered. And equally, the Lake Turkana region, which includes the entire of Lake Turkana Basin, and from which the likes of Turkana boy, Kenyanthropa platyops, Alesi, and the world's oldest stone tools, the Lomekwan, have been discovered. And this research has led to expansion of fieldwork in various African countries that has resulted in multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary, and international collaborations. This approach has enhanced our understanding of past ecosystems, human evolutions, and the interactions between climate, environment, and ancient life. However, these international collaborations are heavily skewed in favor of certain regions, institutions, and individuals. The recognition of unrivaled paleontological and archaeological wealth in Africa was followed up by a setup of organizations that aimed at enhancing the research in paleosciences in Africa, and some of them that are listed here include the Human Evolution Research Institute, Evolutionary Studies Institute, the Paleo Research Institute. All these are research institutions in South Africa. And we have institutions that also facilitate in terms of funding in Africa. We have PAST, a genus, and then we have institutions that enhance our presentations in conferences and all that. These are based in Africa, like the ASAPA, AFCOA, and EAPP. Through these support initiatives, research in Africa has flourished, resulting in millions of fossils and artifacts that are under custodianship of museums, research institutions, and universities. This is the heritage that I want to talk about. The fossil and archaeological heritage entail not just the physical objects, but also data emanating from research into these objects. And as such, this heritage should be viewed comprehensively from where it's obtained, the process of obtaining it, the research on it, the curation, access by other interested parties, conservation, and public dissemination of the research findings. All this is very positive, what has been contributed since Lucy was discovered. However, the influx of researchers interested in paleosciences in Africa, a new kind of animal was born in the late 1980s. This animal threatens to undo the gains achieved, and if we are not careful, there might not be any paleontological or archaeological heritage to talk about when we are celebrating Lucy at 75 symposium, if there will be a symposium for Lucy at 75. This is the animal I've chosen to call the Pariodon. So before colonization of Africa, we had the chiefdoms. And each chiefdom was headed by a chief who ruled his subjects, who ruled over his subjects. And usually the chiefdoms were quite democratic. And it's through the dictates of the people that the chiefs ruled. But the pariodons are a totally different thing. So from the late 1980s and the late and early 90s, the paleosciences saw the rise of pariodons that were equivalent, let me go back to that, the chiefdoms, devoid of democracy or council of elders, and they were research entities under somewhat a single or autocratic leader. So what is the hierarchy of the pariodons? A pariodon is centered around a single paramount leader who exercises both direct and indirect control over multiple research groups. His or her powers owe to the fact that they were the originators of the research group. They are the ones who have the exploration and excavation permits, or they are the ones who are able to secure the largest research grants. Let me emphasize this. Not all research groups that are working in Africa would be considered pariodons. But the reality on the ground is such groupings exist, though we talk about them in hushed tones. And the bottom line is, in the pariodon, you draw the line. So what do pariodons control, and why are they a threat to African heritage? According to UNESCO, heritage is our legacy from the past, what we live with today, and what we pass on to the future generations. Our cultural and natural heritage are both irreplaceable sources of life and inspiration. We all thus have a duty to protect, preserve, transmit this heritage for the common good of all humanity to the future generations. First, the periodomes control paleontological and archaeological sites. They restrict who has access to these sites, even if in instances where they do not have permits for specific localities. We have instances of individuals where you have instances where individual researchers claim to have rights of squares of kilometers of sedimentary units just because they were the first to land in that region. This has hampered exploration and possible discoveries of new sites. Within these sites, they also control what makes it to the museums as part of the heritage. For example, if their interest is only particular species of animals or stone tools, they will only collect those, leaving everything else to be washed away. This creates a biased picture of the site's richness and limits our ability to comprehensively reconstruct the true nature of our past, thus hampering our understanding of past environments, ecosystems, and evolutionary processes. Second, the periodomes control who has access to fossils and artifacts from their research expeditions. It is perfectly okay to control access before initial publications. However, the periodomes extend their control of fossils and artifacts many years after the initial publications. Woe unto you if you're not their friend or their descendant, you most likely will never have access to these resources, even if what you are proposing to investigate is not being carried out by any member of that group. A perfect example is that specimen. That's Ororin tugenensis, which has disappeared since it was discovered, and we don't know where it is. So many of the paleoanthropologists who are here, they will agree with me that some of the key hominid discoveries have never seen the light of day since they were discovered. So where is Ororin tugenensis? While restrictions on fossil access may sometimes be necessary to address these concerns, transparency and open communication are important for fostering trust and collaboration within the scientific community. Researchers should strive to balance the need for access restrictions with the principles of scientific openness, integrity, and responsible stewardship of fossil resources. Not only the periodomes controlling sites and access to fossils and artifacts, they also control the resultant research data. The access to data is not being denied to fellow researchers only, but also to the very institutions that are mandated in curating the fossils and archaeological finds. There are instances where curatorial institutions are in possession of fossils and artifacts without accompanying metadata of where they were collected, by who, and when. These fossils and artifacts have become useless as a heritage object. In addition, some researchers never submit publications emanating from their projects to curatorial staff for updates on data pertaining to specific fossils and artifacts. As such, you get numerous instances where data associated with such heritage is outdated and erroneous. That's within the curatorial staff. These researchers are conducting what we call helicopter research. They jet in, take what they want, and leave. Since inclusion in the periodome family is by vetting and recruitment rather than by choice, The paradigms control the demographic representation and research diversification. This not only applies to lab work, but also to field work. There are some field expeditions in Africa that only take along men, hence excluding women. Owing to the nature of the vetting and recruitment, upcoming researchers, majority of whom will be from Africa, have fewer chances of making it in paleosciences. The limited networking and collaboration opportunities have skewed the demographics in the paleoscientific research. Okay, I'll be good. Okay, that's my work in Baringo. And more, at least half of my field assistants are women. I consciously do that. Access restrictions can hinder innovation in paleontological research by preventing scientists from exploring new methodologies, techniques, and approaches. Without access to diverse fossils, artifacts, and sites, researchers may struggle to develop and test new hypotheses or refine existing theories. Thus, the paradigms, in their very nature, are an impediment to innovation. A couple of people have talked about knowledge as power. Kofi Annan, the 7th Secretary General of the United Nations, said, "Knowledge is power, information is liberating. Education is the promise of progress in every society, in every family." Daniel said, "Information is power only if you can take action with it. Then and only then does it represent knowledge and consequently power." And Robin Morgan said, "Knowledge is power, information is power. The secreting or hoarding of knowledge or information may be an act of tyranny camouflaged as humility." Thus, restricted access to paleontological and archaeological heritage, restricted access to data, biased flow of information can control and control of demographic representation and research diversification ultimately stifles education and training, impedes learning and skills development, hence taking power from individuals and communities entrusted in taking care, preserving, and conserving African heritage on behalf of all of us. The big question is, as I come close to the end, when shall we break the silence and point out those among us who are impeding research and innovation? When shall we embrace inclusivity? When shall we break all barriers and appreciate that we have a common origin and a shared destiny? Addressing these challenges requires concerted efforts from researchers and funding agencies. There has to be a conscious drive to fostering collaboration and ensuring ethical practices in research and exploration in paleosciences. This will in turn change the way heritage is managed, conserved, and presented in Africa. It's my hope that when we will be celebrating Lucy at 75, we'll not be talking about paradigms, but a united community that has done everything possible for our global heritage. As a parting shot to all who are involved, what are you bequeathing the next generation of researchers? And I want to express my gratitude to the Institute of Human Origins for facilitating my presence here. And special thanks to the organizers, Curtis, Johannes, Aubrey, Jury, and everyone else who have made this possible. And thanks all for listening. And much gratitude to Don for discovering Lucy and providing us with a shoulder on which we can step on. African heritage owes a lot to you. And to end, I'll end with this. Kumbule Kaya. Kumbule Kaya means remember home. This, I want Ororin Tugenensis, whatever he or she is, to remember home and come back. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.